Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. I want to welcome you to the next phase with Ice and Friends. And today is like Thursday, right? July the 15th. And I want to give you a brief description. We're going to have Brother T.L. Harris calling through here in just a little bit. And running kind of behind, had some technical difficulties, but I'm sure a few of you may know what that's all about. I certainly know what that's all about. I hope I got them all lined out, and I hope that I'm being heard out there right now. Anyway, I want to tell you that any comments or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or beliefs of the host sponsors or Blog Talk Radio. This show addresses community concerns in regard to designing ways members in our communities can increase their ability to acquire more income for themselves. And in addition to that, methods to address increasing political strength and impact will also be featured. Financial enhancement, increasing political strength and impact, improving possibilities for combining efforts with others who have similar interests. All these and more poignant concerns will be approached in an entertaining format, we hope. There will be musical segments from time to time, interesting guests. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting guests tonight will be Mr. T.L. Harris. And, brother, if you get a chance, just give me a call, and I'll put you on here in a second. There also interesting guests as well as questions and comments from our listening audience. So if you feel free, just give us a dial up here in a little bit. I'll give you the number. If you have any interest in improving situations for our youth, especially our youth, we want to stem the incarceration estimates for minority members of this society, and we feel that we can do that. And we want to reassess the significance of spiritual impact in our community also, investigating the best possible means of boosting knowledge for improving our health, as well as many pertinent topics too numerous to include. I want you to join us right here on the next phase with Ice and Friends. And let me look to see if my brother's called through yet. No, he hasn't. So we'll check the chat room and see what's going on. Anyway, if you want to give us a call, please, at 347-945-7040. And I am the host. My nick, I go by Black Ice. And we do this show every Thursday, 7 to 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. And if you had the time to join us, we're glad to have you. And if you get a chance to listen to us, we're also archived. So we'll be there. You are. Hey, brother, how you doing? I'm putting you on right now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Brother T.L.?
Yes.
No problem, brother. No problem. I'm just, you know, doing what I do. Hey, good to have you.
And glad to be here.
Oh man, I'm so glad to have you here, brother, fellow Texan. And whatever. Let me just give you a rough, brief intro. I'm always shooting from the hip, man. I never do anything prepared, which I wish I could. I'd do you more justice. But you know what, T.L.?
Mm-hmm.
Brother, you represent, so I don't have to. You do your own justice. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. No problem. And but anyway, Brother T.L. Harris is a music historian, and I'm not going to tell you how old he is because I'm just going to let you try to figure it out. And I've had the pleasure of meeting this young man through different chat sites that we frequent, and I've enjoyed him tremendously, and I really appreciate and respect him. And you know, we just wanted to kind of do something a little light and lively today, yet and still it will have a significant bearing, as I hope you'll be able to determine, in our pursuit for improving our conditions in our cultural community, which is people of African descent primarily. But we're not anti anything. We're just pro African, people of African descent, what a lot of people call black people. But anyway, Brother T.L. Harris, I want to get to you, and whatever you want to start off with. You know, if you want to talk about, let me see, some of the topics that I've heard you talk about are Motown, chess, and you know, some of the origins of music, and we should have rehearsed, shouldn't we?
Well, when it comes to music, I can pretty much shoot off the hip.
There you go.
Yeah. Because, well, when you talk about music, there is such a wealth of information.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
As it pertains to music and music history, mm-hmm. which is something that I enjoy talking about a great deal. So, anywhere you want to start, we can start with Motown or Stax.
Well, I tell you what, and I tell you what, I want to let me throw this number back out, brother, because you know I had mentioned to you earlier when I talked with you a few minutes ago that we're going to try to stump you, and I don't know exactly how we'll do it, but you know, if you want to give us a call, if you have any questions about music, I guarantee you Brother T.L. Harris will either know it or he'll be able to access it in the next time, which we hope that he'll come on reoccurring evenings with us from time to time, and we'll get into it as deeply as y'all want to, because I guarantee you, I believe my brother can take us where we want to go. The number to call is 347-945-7040. And Brother Teal, I think one of the things that interested me, can you go back to you got into the Berry Gordy thing, but I was as far back as you can go and talk about, what music was like in our community, some of the earlier artists and some of the earlier promotion and production companies, and how hard maybe the struggle was for us to be aired, and anything like that, and some of the earlier artists and the styles as they evolved, if you don't mind. Is that okay?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
Absolutely fine. Well, if we wanted to reach all the way back, what we would have to do is realize that when you talk about the origins or the very beginnings of music in this country,
mm-hmm.
in the United States of America, you would have to look back at, as I said on your show last time I was on there, the only two original forms of American music that exist are gospel
and
blues.
Right.
Everything else has derived from those two origins of music. And if they didn't come from those two origins of music, then they have come in from another country or another region of the world, be it Europe or Asia or wherever.
Right,
but
right.
But to pinpoint the two origins of music that originated in the United States of America, it is definitely gospel and blues.
Right.
And, those being the first form of music. And I always like to do this, or put it to people in these terms. If you wanted to play the 6 degrees of separation,
with
music, everybody's familiar with that game. At the core, or at the very beginning, it's always going to trace back to blues or gospel.
Okay,
more gospel than
blues.
But can
I interrupt you right quick? Don't lose your thoughts.
Sure.
Let me interrupt you just for a quick second. Now, gospel music is declarative. I mean, it's a declaration of a strong power, which happens to be focused toward God, and a lot of this I'm sure came across on the slave ships. They're rhythmic and their their abilities and skills as far as the musical and vocals and all this, but I'm listening to you speak and I'm thinking that blues, there is a certain power to because when you listen to a certain blues music, it resonates in me similar to the way that gospel music in a way does, although I know that there's a differentiation between the two. You know what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
Oh, perfect sense. Perfect
mm-hmm.
sense. As a matter of fact, and many historians have talked about this over the years, the only difference in blues and gospel, especially early blues and gospel,
mm-hmm.
are the words.
Right.
You may sing My Baby Hold Me on a Saturday night, and on Sunday morning you're singing Jesus Hold Me.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's the same type of thing, especially with, you know, when you get into chord progressions and you know, 8-bar versus 12-bar blues, and all that stuff began in gospel music. As a matter of fact, as you were talking about earlier, when we talked about the origins of gospel music and the power that gospel music has, gospel music has such a power, and I don't even know if a lot of people realize the power that gospel music had, in that in the days of slavery, gospel music, or as it was called, spirituals back then,
right.
or mm-hmm. folk songs, slave songs, they were used to speak in code.
Right.
Because we were not allowed to read. It was against the law for us to read.
Strange.
So in singing these songs, it would be a message for someone to get across the Underground Railroad.
Right.
And that's how those songs were used.
Wow.
And it's just very, very powerful. When you think about where we've come from and us using our ability to sing to, you know, get our point across and to help us to freedom.
Right.
So gospel music has been important since you know, before generations of our family were born.
You know, I'm listening and I'm thinking to myself that with gospel music, it was endurance. You know, because I'm going to just paint a small picture, because I'm not a very, very good at history. But, you know, if you were stripped of your language, stripped of your literal identity, I mean, stripped down almost literally butt naked on a, I'm sorry, butt naked, stripped down, totally, you know, derobed. On a slave block, you know, where they were selling people. And,
right.
I mean, you were afraid, you were starved, you were traumatized, you were in a new land, and your spirit was inside of you crying. I mean, literally crying,
right.
Trying to, you know, and I'm just, and I'll be quiet, but I mean, that to me is when you call, oh Lord, you know, how are you doing me like this? You know, the same thing, oh baby, but you know why? You know, the blues. I feel you what you're saying about, and I'll be quiet, brother, if I haven't totally thrown you off.
No, you're fine. You're fine. And once again, I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, that's the importance of music. It was an outlet, you know.
Right. Oh,
as
yeah,
well,
that's it. Right.
As well as a means of communication. I mean, it's like you're saying, words are so powerful that those who were over us in the period of slavery realized that if we learned how to read and we had that knowledge, how dangerous we could be. So punishment for learning how to read in slavery days was death.
Right.
You could
die
because you knew how to read.
Exactly.
What they were afraid of was our ability to communicate to one another. But what they didn't know was we learned how to do that anyway. And music was the means for us to do that.
You know, I tell you, I was raised by my grandmother, my great grandmother, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my great grandmother, I can remember her telling me when I was like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old, that people had to pray under tubs because they couldn't be seen, you know, praying. I mean, that must have been a heck of a fear, that you couldn't allow somebody to just outright, you know, pray. To feel so, I mean, because you knew if you prayed, or like you say, if you read, not only were you subjected to physical torture, and I mean, you know, these are things that are lost in our community, because the transition, a lot of us, you know, even, and I know you know, but a lot of younger people don't really realize the transitions that we've gone through. They think that we all of a sudden arrived where we are today.
I really don't want to get ahead of myself here, but
okay, I'm sorry. You take your time.
No, you're fine. I have to mention this because you said mm-hmm. that. Because we don't realize what our people have been able to do and what our people have been able, what we've been able to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
then you get people out here in situations that, you know, you have young men disrespecting women in their songs and calling all these women out of their name.
Right.
You have situations where you have all of these young women who have no respect for themselves and decide
right.
to dress mm-hmm. any way they feel is appropriate, which may not be. I mean, recently, earlier this year, we lost one of the true pioneers in Lena Horne.
Right.
And
right.
Lena Horne was as beautiful and as intelligent and as classy as anyone
right.
ever in this country. And
right.
she didn't have to take off one piece of clothing.
Right.
She didn't have to degrade herself in any way.
Right.
As a matter of fact, she refused to do so.
Isn't that something?
And we're living now where a Lena Horne would refuse to do a role
right.
where she had to show something or had to do something to get the role, to where young ladies just taking it off just for the sake of taking it off.
What?
Now, I'm not saying that this entire generation, but it's
right.
a section of the generation that needs to be addressed. You know, and there is a wealth of great knowledge in the life of Lena Horne,
right.
Ella Fitzgerald, Carmen
right.
McRae, and all
right.
of these wonderfully great legends.
Brother, would you speak to, you know, and I tell you, a lady, and I can't, there's a couple of women that I can't think of that, you know, escaped to France and whatnot. And, you know, Eartha Kitt was a very classy woman. But, you know, Billie Holiday is so tragic to me, man. I mean, such a wonderfully talented individual. Not to say that there weren't probably hundreds, if not thousands, of others who suffered so tremendously that they couldn't reach the levels of stardom that those ladies that you just mentioned, you know, did reach, you know. But Billie Holiday, man, I have a hard time watching any movies about her because,
right.
you know, I mean to you know, just to survive, let alone survive in an industry that was so vicious and I mean, that just adds more intensity onto just surviving, you know?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm, the more notoriety you get, you know. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just agreeing with you in that Billie Holiday is definitely one of the more tragic figures, not only in African-American history, but in American music.
Right,
because
right.
she was a woman who was so incredibly gifted. I mean, her musical, mm-hmm. I mean, we're not talking just about her abilities as a songwriter,
mm-hmm.
but her musical
wow.
sensibilities and her music intelligence in the
mm-hmm.
studio
mm-hmm.
Was just astounding and left mm-hmm. musicians who were the greatest musicians, not only of their day, but of
mm-hmm.
our generation,
mm-hmm.
left them in awe. but the sad part about that is, and I find, and this is just me, I found that, and I put Billie Holiday in the category of genius. When
right.
you have geniuses,
right?
I have yet to find one genius who is not a tortured soul.
Right, I see.
And
mm-hmm.
and I've always felt that if you have this wonderfully exceptional talent and
right.
you are considered a genius for the talents that you have,
mm-hmm.
it has been my finding that all of those people, and I can run off a list for you, have
mm-hmm.
had to pay a huge, huge price
mm-hmm.
for the talent that they have.
Mm.
Now, whether you call it a huge price that they had to pay,
mm-hmm.
or you can even call it their own undoing.
Right.
But a price had to be paid for the talents that they had. And it's just interesting. And Billie Holiday, again, even if you put her on that list,
right.
is one of the more tragic figures.
And, you know, like I say, it hurts, man, when I mean, you know, because... See, I was, you know, and I'm just amazed at you, man, the depth that you have of knowledge. I lived through a lot of this, and the Nat, I can remember when Nat King Cole had a television show.
Yes.
You know, and you know, the brother was always smiling, man, and you know that he was going through some stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
And you know, and all
Absolutely.
Of these people, when they, like you say, Lena Horne, no telling what she went through to preserve her dignity.
She went through. She was one of the first entertainers that you know was able to play to an integrated audience in World War II.
Wow.
Because it got to a point where she absolutely refused to do two shows, one for black troops and one for white troops. And she also refused to let the black troops sit in the back.
She was initiating social change with the power that
absolutely.
She had as a genius.
Absolutely. Not only that, but she was able not only to lend her money to the cause of the civil rights movement with Dr. King, but she
mm-hmm.
lent her time and she lent her efforts. A lot of people don't realize it. Lena Horne actually marched with Dr. King several
wow.
times
mm-hmm.
to fight for social change and social injustice, and actually refused to play certain gigs because
mm-hmm.
Of the integration laws. I mean,
wow.
so she was definitely a woman of social change, and in all that time, I mean, from her career, you got to realize this lady started in the mid-30s.
Yeah.
Her first movie
wow.
was in 1936, The Duke Is Tops. And from 1936 to
mm-hmm.
the time that she passed this year in 2010, this woman has always personified grace, elegance,
right.
and dignity.
Oh, absolutely.
So my hat's off
to Lena Horne. Oh, you know what? I'm glad you, because I would have gone right by her, man. I T.L. Harrison. And I want to let everybody know this. My guest is Brother T.L. Harris, a fellow Texan. And if you want to give us a call, 347-945-7040. And Brother T.L. Harris is to me a tremendous mind. His expertise, his interest, and his avocation. Is music history, and as you see as we progress along, I'm sure that he can provide you some interesting details that you may or may not have known, and if you didn't, it'll be interesting and surprising, and if you did, it'll be just a reaffirmation of the knowledge that you already have. But
brother,
go right ahead.
I just want to let you know, I have to run for a quick moment, but as soon as I get back, I'm going to call into your show. But
okay.
There's something that I have to take care of.
You go do what you have to do, brother, and I appreciate you calling in. I'll try to wing it till you get back.
All right.
But I'll be
sure
looking for you. All
right.
Thank you. Appreciate it now.
All right.
Bye. Anyway, that's Brother T.L. Harrison. He's got to go take care of some business, some, and I understand that. We all have business to take care of. And what I hope to do is to provide you with some information that you may or may not have, but I'm extremely interested in how music has played a role in the evolution of society. And I didn't do any research in as far as the music was concerned, but I have some information, hopefully always on hand, about some social issues that I think are reasonably relevant and hopefully pertinent to day-to-day life for us as people, all people, but especially people of African descent. You know, one of the issues, and I'm trying to find the information on it, and I want to thank you for joining us. If you are joining there are some friends of mine, I think, that may on occasion have a room open on a chat site that we frequent. And if you do, thank you for allowing that, and I really appreciate it. You know, here's an article, and I might try to bring it up and see see if it might be anything of interest for you. And what it is excuse me just a second. I'm trying to pull it up right now. But what this article is about the new, quote-unquote, black narrative in search of a black narrative. And I found this article on theloop21.com, and the author is Tara Connolly. And what she said was, a few months ago, I was at a friend's house in Harlem with several other blacks and brown folk. The evening turned into a storytelling jam session about where we all came from. After rambling on about my Irish, African-Irish, and Blackfoot Native American backgrounds, one quick-witted sister blurted out, "I'm just a regular Negro from Maryland." As regular and as Negro as we are, we're also as complicated and lively as the stories we tell about ourselves. This idea makes me question what it all means for the Black American narrative. The one in which scholar Charles Johnson describes below. The unique Black American narrative, which emphasizes the experience of victimization, is quietly in the background of every conversation we have about black people, even when it's not fully articulated or expressed. It's our starting point, our agreed-upon premise, our most important presupposition for dialogues about Black America. It is the foundation for both our scholarship and our popular entertainment as they relate to Black Americans frequently. It is the way we approach each other as individuals. So what is it? Essentially, the Black American narrative simultaneously oppresses us and empowers us. It derives from a painful place as a result of oppression brought on by slavery, lynching, Jim Crow, and institutionalized racism. It's also responsible for conceiving and giving birth to liberation and civil rights movement. This narrative is unique to Black Americans. It's also complex, not only because of the histories it speaks to, but also because of how it conflicts with our current lived stories that deal with more than just racial identity. Accepting that our history will not change, how then does the Black American narrative work in addressing what we all, what we need as black people now that we are, as Johnson argues, less culturally and politically homogeneous than ever before? Black and brown people traverse throughout American society while occupying various worlds of identities that intersect with one another. While navigating these intersections, at times, we rely entirely on the stories from our past to understand and confront the oppression and discrimination we face in our present. In a way, these stories also become part of our identity, though I wonder what's at stake for us politically and culturally when we solely rely upon the Black American narrative to fulfill an ideological and political agenda. She goes on to say in this article, and what I'd like to do at this point in time is if you want to give us a call, 347-945-7040, and we'll be, we'll have, and we also have a chat room on Black Talk Radio if you want to come in and do some chatting with us. Anyway, consider President Obama. He and his administration, for the most part, have taken a race-neutral approach. Do y'all believe that? Do you believe that he's taking a race-neutral approach to policies and reactions to racial inequality, inequality in this country? The narrative he and the administration have chosen creates a bland and homogeneous picture of Americans that are almost vulnerable and in most need. While not acknowledging race as much of a factor, it appears that the administration prefers a class-based narrative to champion above all. Depending on what ideologies you favor and what identity-based issues matter most will determine whether or not you think Obama's approach is, for lack of a better word, bullshit. In terms of the black narrative, though Obama doesn't use it, nor does he seem to need it when speaking about Americans most economically and physically vulnerable. Consider also how the narrative works in a cultural space. The recent debate between Professor Mark Lamont Hill and Houston rapper Slim Thug caused quite a ruckus around the net last week. Whether this exchange was meaningful is up for debate. Though it's clear that this idea of experiencing victimization is at the crux of the conversation, folks criticized Professor Hill for taking on an issue that appears silly or an easy target. On the flip side, others criticized Slim Thug's remarks by calling them harmful, hurtful, insulting, and uninformed. While the back and forth and criticisms were riveting to witnesses on the web, I'm more interested in how these interactions and reactions or many stories on race, gender, and sexuality reflect who we are as people constantly searching for ways to propel us out of systematic forms of oppression. The black narrative, this ideal of racial victimization, is present in this instance. Though it still doesn't speak entirely to the issues of the black American womanhood in the 21st century. So what is the black American narrative? It is still useful? Are we better off searching for new and different narratives that encompass more of what we've become as people, as a people? Johnson calls for the new stories grounded in the present, leaving behind the painful history of slavery and its consequences. However, I'm not so sure it's as much about leaving behind the history of the narrative as it is about remembering, that is, recollecting, reorganizing these histories so we can answer the questions W.E.B. Du Bois posed in 1926. What do we want? What is the thing we are after? But anyway, that was an interesting article that I found here a while back by Tara L. Conley, C-O-N-L-E-Y, T-A-R-A L. Conley, and I found this in the loop21.com. So if you have any issues or that you want to discuss, you want to give us a call, feel free to do so, 347-945-7040, and we'll be glad to put you on the line. Hey, Lady A391, how you doing? Good to see you. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. And I'll look up some more articles. Hopefully, Brother Teal Harris will be back in a little bit to speak more about musical history. But in the meantime, if you have any comments or that you'd like to give us a call, 347-945-7040, about the black narrative and what kind of an effect does it have on you? You know, is it something that's holding you back? Is it something that's causing you to be more motivated and pushing you forward? Is it causing you to be more skeptical, more scrutinize things a lot more closely? I mean, you know, what, in fact, does the quote-unquote black narrative, what effect does it have on you as a person? You know, and if you have any comments, just give us a call. We'd appreciate it. Anyway, I'll look at another article for you. What I was trying to find is one of the more recent articles about the Tea Party. You know, since the NAACP was having its meeting up in I think it was Kansas City, Missouri, and what they had called a Tea Party was a racist or had racist in it, and they challenged the Tea Party to get the racists out of their movement, you know. And there was an article about it, and I'm trying to find it right now. Hopefully I can run up on it before too long. But anyway, we enjoy having you here. If you have a chance, we're going to have some other things hopefully in the future. A wonderful friend of mine that I've met online, hopefully next week, and this is on Thursday, 7 to 8:30 p.m., we'll be talking about genealogy, you know. So do you think that genealogy would be a pertinent topic? Do you think that there's anything about genealogy that would be in any way beneficial to you? And she'll be having that, hopefully, discussion next week, my friend Panadia. and she'll be bringing you some information about genealogy. One of the other topics, and after that, I'll be a friend of mine that I've met, and I only go by Nick's to keep everybody's anonymity. If they want to maintain and retain their anonymity, then also I encourage that, you know, because I do, because you don't know much about this net. But anyway, also let me thank some of the people that have rolled through here previously. Like I think one of the first people that came through was Ladies Down South, and then I have a list of names, and I hate to let's see, Platinum One Love For You rolled through one time, Teach Pepsi rolled through one time, and Black Magic Woman. I can't leave out Brother Olajami and Brother Sapata. Appreciate them coming through. Plus, Lady Di, Lady Lily, who has a site. And Brother, I can't forget Brother Legacy for Life, who he's got about 10 sites up. And what he does is he uses the potential of the internet, as you know, we all spend a lot of time on the net, and what he does is maximizes his possibilities by using different sites to promote whatever it is that he's promoting. And hopefully we'll have him back on, and he can give you some information about that, because it was very interesting for me. He has some health products and that he markets, and we had an interesting conversation last night with Brother Ola, and Brother Ola had some information on health products and different strategies for improving your condition, physical condition, and so forth. But anyway, those are some of the things, some of the items that we touch on during the show that we do here. And that's going to be Thursday, 7 to 8:30 p.m. until I can't pick this phone up. But anyway, here's another story about the Tea Party. So why aren't Tea Parties demanding that the government hold BP accountable? And this I got out of thinkprogress.org. It says Tea Party activists' self-proclaimed mission is to demand lower taxes. Tea, in fact, stands for Taxed Enough Already. As part of this anti-tax crusade, the Tea Party has vehemently opposed comprehensive health reform. Comprehensive health reform, it's opposed it. It's opposed clean energy legislation and mandatory garbage collection. Just a couple, three things that the Tea Party has opposed. Given that these protesters take their name from the Boston Tea Party, which was organized around protesting an unfair tax benefit given to a massive British corporation, and that British oil grant giant BP's oil disaster could end up costing taxpayers billions of dollars. You'd think that Tea Partiers would be demanding that the government hold BP accountable and make the corporation pay for the full cost for its bad behavior, so that taxpayers don't have to foot the bill. And did you know, I don't know, I'm sure that probably most of you all know. Oh, lady, let me see what you were saying over here. I'm sorry. Brother Legacy, I asked him to come back. Hey, Lady A391. Yeah, I know who that is now. Yeah, Brother Legacy, I asked him to come back, and I hope he will. So I talked with him last night. And but anyway, I'm sure that most of you all know that about the Tea Party is going to be able to deduct off their taxes about a third of the expenses that they're going to incur from cleaning up the Gulf. And so the third that they'll deduct is the third that the taxpayers will have to pick up, because, you know, what they could have done was been more careful in their pursuit of this product. This oil. Now, from what I've heard today, is they got the oil stopped, you know, and that's fortunate, because my personal opinion was that the what'd you say, Lady A? Oh, okay, but my personal opinion was that you know, I thought that the casing and the production string was so damaged below the surface of the Gulf that they would never be able to stop totally the leaks that were coming out of there. But they had it shut down, so that's good news. That's good news, you know, because, you know, and another thing that I was thinking about is that Michael Vick, right? Michael Vick got in trouble for some dogs that he fought, and he had to serve jail time, you know. Now, how would you compare it? Now, PETA was going nuts about Michael Vick. You know, you couldn't turn on your TV without PETA, PETA, PETA. And he had to personally go and apologize to PETA about the dogs, right? Now, what I'm wondering is, why didn't PETA attack BP? I mean, BP killed dolphins and crabs and shrimp, redfish, tuna. I mean, what else? Oysters. You know, but it's amazing how absent those voices are in this situation. You know, all the skepticism, all the scrutiny that Michael Vick, you know, all the embarrassing articles that were written. Michael Vick had to serve time in jail because of fighting some dogs, right? And welcome, guest 3846. You know, but it's amazing that there's not a word to be said about, you know, BP and the destruction and the havoc that they've caused. And you know, an interesting thing, let me check to see if my brother's back yet. No, he's not back yet, so I'll just continue on this vein. Hey, if you want to give me a call, 347-945-7040, and we're here Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m., about an hour and a half, and we'll talk about pretty much anything you want to talk about, and we'll see if we can relate it to improving our conditions. as a culture and as a society, hold on just a second, please. Got a frog in my throat. But anyway, you know, the people down there on the Gulf, I'm looking at these people, and I'm looking at them. They want to be restored. They want reparations. They want reparations, you know? And, I mean, hey, don't we all want them to have reparations? Or don't we all want them to be, you know, fully compensated for their losses? You know, and some of these people, as I understand it, don't even file income taxes, so they only giving verbally what they assess that they're worth. Can you imagine reparations? Ooh, that's a strange word, right? I've never heard that word before. But anyway, I'm trying to figure out why is it that the PETA and all associated entities haven't gone haywire. I mean, they should be marching in the streets, you know, with all the pelicans that got oil on them. And I mean, you know, all the birds and the turtles. I mean, how many turtles have lost their life as a result of this oil spill? I mean, BP should be on his knees begging PETA to stop it. Stop it. Slow down, PETA, you know. But I'm wondering, where is PETA? It's like, you know, it's like they're very absent, very quiet, very, you know, subdued, you know. And it's like I was talking about, they were all over Reverend Wright, because Reverend Wright said, "God damn America," right? And they took that speech, took those words totally out of context. Reverend Wright was referring to those the indiscriminate killing of people by massive weapons of mass destruction. And did it end the war? I'm sure that it I mean, hell, if you dropped a bomb on a country and wiped out, just literally totally disintegrated a large portion of his population, I pretty much might say, hey, wait, I give. You know, hey, let's shut this deal down. But, you know, in the process of doing that, there were children at daycare centers. There were nurses in the hospital, patients, grandmothers, grandfathers, you know, that weren't even involved in the war effort or whatever, you know. And they got incinerated. I mean, just destroyed. And Reverend Wright said, if you don't stop this indiscriminate killing of people, it's not going to be God bless America. It's going to be God damn America. And, you know, it says in the Bible that you can cause eternal damnation to your soul. Damnation, which is a real word, you know. But, you know, there's no, you know, we heard that ad infinitum, you know, just over and over, continually and continuously we heard that. But now Rush Limbaugh said that he and his group found themselves on the same side as the Taliban. And if you want to, I'll give you that article, you know. You can email me at blackicz.1@gmail.com. And if you want to, I'll give you the address of that article so you can see it, what Rush Limbaugh said. Rush Limbaugh said that he found himself on the side of the Taliban. And the Taliban are associated with Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda were the ones that we supposedly went to destroy. Osama bin Laden. Now, Rush Limbaugh and Osama bin Laden are friends now. You know, but you don't see that looped. You don't see that over and over and over on TV. Rush Limbaugh saying, I find myself on the side of the Taliban. You don't see that. But they, if it was Reverend Wright, oh, yeah, you see that over and over and over again. Wonder why. Is the corporate media not as willing and as ready to not, you know, take it out of context, because it was totally in context. He said that I find myself on the, you know. So, and I'm looking at, you know, this disproportionate accentuation of some individuals, you know, and then, you know, the careful covering up of other individuals. Can you imagine? Wonder what would the U.S., what would the world say? What would society say if CNN, C-SPAN, which I call C-SPAN because they got the same host with the same dumb ideas and the same newspapers every day over and over and over, and it's just like a big old focus group is all it is. If you had CNN, C-SPAN, MSNBC, Fox Noise, CBS News, ABC News, you know, what would it be like if they all kept running Rush Limbaugh over and over? Every day, day in and day out, saying that he found himself. I wonder, would he still have his sponsors, or would the sponsors drop him? You know, would people quit patronizing? Would they quit being ditto, Rush? Ditto. Or would they just continue to support this fool? You know, and then he has the nerve to call Steinbrenner a cracker. I mean, this guy is, this is a lunatic. And you know, you wonder why is it that unemployment was up 750, people were losing jobs at a rate of 750,000 a month? You know, because those people are the tea baggers, the birthers, and what else are they call themselves? I want to take my country back to where? To oblivion? Destruction? Back to the, what, the 17th, 16th, 18th century? Where? Take it back to where? You know, and why are you taking your country back? Take mine with you, you know? You know, because I'm going to take my country back, too. This is my country. You know what I'm saying? All men were created equally. with certain inalienable rights. All men, oh, you're not a man. Oh, you're three-fifths of a man. Oh, we owned you. Oh, you know, I mean, but anyway, I digress. What I was doing was trying to finish reading this article. Tea Party activist self-proclaimed mission to demand lower taxes. Tea, in fact, stands for, I already read that part. Yet the Tea Partiers haven't descended on BP's headquarters or marched on Capitol Hill demanding, for example, that the government, they didn't spit on the BP. They didn't call BP nigger. Like they did John Lewis. John Lewis, just for his, you know, desiring his civil freaking rights. He took clubs to the head, horses and dogs and water hoses. And then I can remember, and I'll retort this again because there may be people who had never heard me mention this before. I was in a chat room and I was having a discussion. Well, not a discussion, but arguing and fussing. And this lady tells me that I'm telling her, everybody in the room, you know, that, hey, look, you know, why did this happen? And this woman has the freaking nerve, the unmitigated gall, to tell me, well, isn't it getting better? I'm like, what? Did you say, isn't it getting better? It's not like, I'm like, how do you want it? How do you want it for your son? How do you want it for your uncle and your nephew? Now you tell them, isn't it getting better? You know, you're going to tell me, how do you want it? I want it just like you want it. All you are is a citizen, just like I am. No more, no less. So you don't be doling out to me what your thoughts and beliefs are that I should have. Oh, you should be happy. Don't you feel better? And it getting, hell no, it's not getting better. You know, until it's all the same. Until that the cops get life for shooting a young man in the back. That's how I want it. That's when it gets better. When a cop gets for committing murder, he gets prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, then it'll get better, you know. But anyway, it says, Tea Party's having descended on the BP's headquarters on marched on Capitol Hill, demanding, for example, that the government lift the $75 million oil spill liability cap on BP so that the damages paid, damages it pays aren't severely limited. On the contrary, they've attacked President Obama. Who did what? The Tea Party did what? Attacked President Obama for securing a $20 billion escrow just in case they wanted to declare bankruptcy. Before you do, guys, we want you to commit this $20 billion so that you can wait. What's that word? Repair. Reparations? We need $20 billion worth of reparations for this little bitty bunch of people down here in the Gulf of Mexico. Reparations. We want $20 billion. Obama said we want $20 billion set aside just in case you want to go bankrupt, belly up, whatever, you know. And we want this money set aside and so that funds from BP to recompensate victims of the oil spill. And cozied up to, you know, wait, let me make sure I get this all in context. On the contrary, they've attacked President Obama for securing a $20 billion escrow fund from BP to recompensate victims of his oil spill and cozied up. That's what the almighty Tea Party did, the Sarah Palin Tea Party. What did she do? We cozied up to the politicians who sided with BP. We're sorry, BP, Joe Barton. We're sorry. You leave him alone. Don't touch me. And as the Associated Press noted last week, Tea Party candidates have stood by BP. Wait. Let me see. I must have read that wrong. Tea Party candidates have stood by BP. Wow. To rail against President Obama is what they did. Not just talk about him. They railed against him. But you think that Chris Matthews is going to say this to you? You think that Ed Schultz is going to say this to you? Even Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow or Hillbilly Joe Scarborough or Dylan Radican or Whiff Blitzer or John King or what's that other, Ed Big Fathead Pighead, Ed Henry or Brian Lamb, the creep, you think they're going to tell you that? Hell no. I don't think they're going to tell you that. But then you may not want to know that, right? Anyway, I'm waiting on my brother, Mr. T.L. Harrison. I hope he comes back. Oh, guest 33980. Was it? Yep. Welcome, guest. Sorry, just a second. 3980. Thank you. I can't type. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. I really do. You know, because I do this every Thursday, 7:30 p.m. And I don't know, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Am I embarrassing you? Am I making you angry? Am I making you laugh? Is it funny? I don't know. You know, I just do what I do, right? But anyway, the Tea Party candidates have stood by BP. Stand by your BP. And railed against President Obama. Here are just a few examples of Tea Party organizers and Tea Party endorsed politicians. You want to hear some examples of the Tea Party endorsed politicians siding with the foreign oil giant against American? Wait. Did I say that wrong? Here are just a few examples of Tea Party organizers and Tea Party endorsed politicians siding with who? The foreign oil giant against whom? American taxpayers, as in Y-O-U, American taxpayers. Excuse me. Republican Study Committee Chair Representative Tom Price, who just happens to be a Republican from Georgia, not picking on any particular party here, a Republican Study Committee Chairman, Representative Tom Price, Republican of Georgia, who headlined a tax day tea party in the nation's capital this year. Well, he derided the escrow fund. He just totally derided it. Now, how in the world do you deride? So he derided the escrow fund as a Chicago-style shakedown politics. Wonder where's Obama from? You know, Obama's got that Chicago, you know, that nasty Chicago style. He just got it like that, right? Then, of course, you got Representative Joe Barton, Republican from where? My state, Texas, who proudly boasted of supporting the Tea Party movement and the people getting involved, echoed Price's language as he apologized to BP CEO Tony Hayward for the White House's shakedown. Amazing. You know, it's the echo chamber. And you're going to see that if you look at corporate media, excuse me, if you don't find some alternative source of media, you're going to hear shakedown, you know, echo chamber. It performed while trying to hold his company accountable. Oh, conservative talk show host and chairman of the Tea Party Express. Oh, this dude, you got to look this dude up. I'm going to tell you his name is Mark Williams. All right, look this dude Mark Williams up and look at some of the stuff. Excuse me. Look at some of the stuff Mark Williams said. He compared Obama's efforts to secure the escrow fund to those of mobsters. You dirty little mobster with no birth certificate. You weren't born here in the United States. You're just a Kenyan socialist, you know. But the socialists, we don't want a socialist until... We want the president to go down and take over and nationalize the oil company and get rid of the oil. And we don't want socialism until we want everybody, all the taxpayers, to contribute to the restoration or reparation of the Gulf Coast and the related shrimp and industries and so forth, right? But then that's when it's handy to have a little socialism in your blood when you got your hand out. You know what I'm saying? And but anyway, then we talk about, let's go a little further here. The Tea Party. Oh, then he added, this Mike Williams guy, and he added that where he comes from, they call it extortion. That's a crime. So Obama, he's just a duly elected presidential criminal. He's a mobster, and he extorted money from BP, you know, so that he could ensure that the affected and ill-affected individuals in the Gulf Coast had some restoration. My dear brother, here you are. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Welcome back, brother. I was just messing around a little bit. I hope I didn't get too far. But you know what, Brother T.L., welcome back, and thanks for coming back, brother. I was just on a rant, man, about the Tea Party, and I don't want you to get into that. You go back to your whatever your music history is. You know, we were talking, I think, a little bit about you had gone past through Lena Horne, and you had mentioned about Billie Holiday, and you had talked about the wonderful personalities that they had and the social impact as well as the impact on the musical industry and all related aspects. And wherever you want to take up and wherever you want to take us to, sir, is fine with me.
Sure, I can do that. Well, I'll tell you one thing we can talk about. We can talk about the importance of Motown.
Ah, thank you.
And the impact that Motown had globally.
Right, right.
Which is very interesting. And I'll start off with this. Young man who was a boxer and a record store owner, among many other things, took an $800 loan from his family co-op from the family business. And
how much
7
did
years,
you say? Would you repeat that? How much?
It was an $800 loan.
$800.
$800 in 1959.
Okay.
And in 7 years, turned that $800 into $15 million.
Whoa, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. What was Barry Gordy? Was he from United Kingdom?
Barry Gordy was born and raised in Detroit.
Oh, okay.
But his family had a very successful business within the city, building buildings and houses and things of that nature. So,
surely not entrepreneurs.
What's that?
I said, surely they weren't entrepreneurs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, let me say this. We recently lost, a couple of weeks ago, a legend by the name of Harvey Fuqua. Harvey Fuqua was a man who was founded in a group called the Moonglows. The Moonglows, they had
right.
a couple of big hits, Ten Commandments of Love, had a song by the name of Sincerely. And Harvey Fuqua was also married to Barry Gordy's sister Anna.
Never knew that.
And it was actually Anna who had a record label before her brother, and the label was Anna Records.
Get out of
One
here.
Of the songwriters for
a
Anna
woman?
Records. Absolutely. A very successful woman. As a matter of fact, Anna was the one that taught Barry about the business. And one of the songwriters that happened to work for Anna at the time was a very, very young man who aspired to be a singer who went on to greater fame with Motown, and that man's name was Lamont Dozier.
Dozier and what's Holland
Dozier and Holland.
Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. So That's how they got their start. Now, what happened was Anna, you know, Mary decided to start Motown, or at the time it wasn't Motown, it was actually Pamela Records.
Mm,
and Motown actually started out, right. And Motown actually was a subsidiary of Pamela Records.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Motown started, and had all of his family working with him on the staff. Now, there was about, Mary had 8 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And I believe he had about five sisters and 3 brothers.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, or something along those lines. I know he definitely had more sisters than brothers. Very, very powerful women, very, very strong women, and women
wow.
who were very influential to him in his record label.
Right.
So you definitely have to give credit where credit is due. But the importance of Motown, as I see it, was, and Smokey Robinson was also there that very first day they decided to form Motown Records, which, if I'm not mistaken, the date was January 18th, 1959. And Berry Gordy had 5 guys together, and Smokey Robinson was one of those guys. And Smokey said to those guys, he said, look, I'm sorry, Berry said to these guys, we're not going to make black music. We're not going to make white music. We're just going to make music with a great beat and great stories.
Good move.
And that's what they happened to do. Now, when they decided to coin the phrase Sound of Young America, it was an economic deal on Berry's part.
Right.
Berry Gordy was one of the first black record label owners to realize that if you market to both the black audience and the white audience, that you would very well get the desired result, you know, which definitely happened. And Berry Gordy was masterful at marketing the brand that became Motown.
Hey, brother, can I butt in? Hold that thought now.
Sure.
You can segregate people, but you can't segregate that resonance of those beats.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was the point that Berry Gordy tried to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you definitely have to you definitely have to give them credit.
Right.
Hello?
I'm right here.
Okay, yes, I'll make sure you're still there. Definitely interesting what Motown was able to do and the impact that they had on the world. Motown,
absolutely.
Interestingly enough to me, and I want you to think about this for a moment. Motown was the only label that I can think of that is its own genre of music. And you have rock, you have blues, you have heavy metal, and you have Motown. That record label was its own genre of music.
Right. Good point.
And that was all because of the vision of one man, Berry Gordy. So you definitely have to give him credit for what he did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, yeah, let me break in on you again, brother. Oh, let me, if anybody wants to, I saw It Will Be If You Will It. It Can Be If You Will It. I was on the, I didn't get back to the screen in time to see you. And I don't know if Brother Sabatai has his room open, but if so, peace, blessings, high regards, Hotep to you all. And to anybody that's listening out there, mucho blessings, appreciate you. And Lady A 391 and guest 3846, Shudu, thank you for being in the room. Brother T.L. Harris, I'm going to drop this number out there again, and I'm going to see if anybody can stump you if they choose to. 347-945-7040, and we're talking with Brother T.L. Harris, a young gentleman from my home state of Texas, and a musical historian, and I really appreciate you, and I will get out. Oh, you were saying, let me, it was one thing I was going to ask you about.
Yes.
You know, you get to talking about a thing, and I don't want to throw you off, but it's you were talking about masters and something there one day, and I was kind of
publishing rights and royalties and things of that nature. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that all work out? You said no. I'm going to let you just take your time because You know, I tell you, you know, when you talk, I get so interested, I want to interrupt you, but I don't want to make you lose your train of thought. And, you know, so I one of the things I wanted to touch on, if we don't do it this time, we'll do it another time, if you don't mind.
Sure, no problem.
You know, I had a cousin. You remember Dr. Rock?
Yeah.
Dr. Rock in Dallas, and my cousin signed with him. Well, Dr. Rock took that contract and locked him up, and he couldn't play with any other. What do you call it? You know what I'm talking about?
Right. He wasn't allowed to, you know, play with any other artist or record or something like that.
Exactly, until Dr. Rock decided to let him go. And I don't mean to be throwing Dr. Rock's name out there like I disrespect him, but I'm just saying that that was an incident that I remember. This was back in the 80s.
Right,
and so I'm just... Well, go ahead.
I tell you what, because when you get into that type of subject, it runs so deep.
We
can save that for another show because I really want to... be
Absolutely.
Able to expound on that with the
Thank
accurate
you.
Time and,
yes,
and that it takes to expound upon that particular subject because,
right.
you know, that runs deep and it's a whole other section of the industry. and as you know, and as we've talked about, you know, you and I talked about before,
right.
the pitfalls and some of the celebrities who've got caught up in situations like that.
Exactly. Yep.
And the importance, and I'll just say this because I really don't want to, you know, pack the whole thing, but I will say this. The importance, and if I could get this point across to any of the young artists who are aspiring to be successful in the industry, it is important to be in control of your own material.
Mm.
Because if someone else has control of your material, then they own you.
Right, right.
And we've seen that way too many times in the music industry. I mean, to the point where artists actually had to borrow against the own money they were making because they didn't own their own music.
Right.
I mean, that's how.
Mm-hmm. Go no, I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. Do you have your computer on? I mean, if you got to turn your sound down. And because otherwise it's got a lag to it.
No, actually, I'm not at my PC right now.
Oh, okay, no problem. Yeah. I keep interrupting you, and I I'm sorry to do that. But you raised so many different ideas in my mind, Atiyah, and I appreciate it, man.
Oh no problem. I'm definitely glad to be able to do that. You know, I mean because that's what it's all about. You know.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you know, if there's someone who is listening to this and. Is inspired to get into the business based on the history. I definitely hope that can happen because, or not even that, but my main thing is, you know, and I'll go ahead and say my age because I don't have a problem with it because most people are shocked when I say how old I am anyway. I'm 28 years old.
I never would have believed it, man. When you told me that, I was like, you got to be joking me. Shoot.
But you know, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people say, you know, well, how do you know all about this at the age of 28 or what have you? And I said, well,
exactly.
Well, here's my thing, and this is what I'm experiencing at the moment. There is a movement of people around my age to get back to the history of our music.
Right.
And I've said this before, and I've had conversations with very good friends of mine, and this is one of the things that we've discussed. One of the genres of music where I have a great appreciation for their people is actually country music. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Country musicians or country artists will do a 30-minute tribute to an artist that had the one-hit wonder back in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't celebrate artists who were successful over a 10, 20, or 30-year period.
Right, right. I was going to just say, you know, let me tell you what. This is a weird thing. I was raised down the street from you on 180, down the street going west right? Not too far from Abilene, Texas, in a little country town out there, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't hear anything but country music. And I grew to detest it because it didn't represent me. And, I mean, it was force-fed to me. And every now and then, I could, you remember KNOK, every now and then we could get, if the conditions were right, I could get KNOK or Randy's Record Shop out of, Nashville 10?
Uh-huh.
You remember, I don't know if you ever, that's way before your time. But, you know, and the thing of it is but I've heard artists, like I was listening to, saw a tribute to, about, with Hank Williams Jr. one day. And this dude loosened up the strings on his guitar. And let me tell you right quick, Lady A391 told me, she said she got the deal, the symbol for Love You, Brother, TL. So,
she said what?
She said, Love You, Brother, TL.
Well, tell her I said thank you very much, and I really truly do appreciate that.
Yeah, she could hear you and everything. But I was going to say that, huh?
I'm sorry,
you want to say? Yeah, anyway, this dude loosened the strings on his guitar, and this dude cut down on some blues, man, and I was like, you know, and I've heard these studio musicians, but Hank Williams Jr. cut down on some blues, and I was like, dude, I didn't believe this guy could, you know, I think I had the misconception that these guys could only play what they were. These guys can play a lot of stuff, man, you know.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned country music because, you know, if you really listen to country music, country and blues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine put it this way one day, and I had to agree, that blues and country music are actually cousins. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and when you listen to country got a lot of its musicality from the blues.
Everywhere from their
content to the chord changes to from 8-bar to 12-bar blues. That was first introduced in blues.
Right.
And for country to do the exact same thing.
Right.
You know, country did it after blues did, because the first blues record was recorded in 1920. So,
Okay.
1920.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely has a huge impact on not only the blues, but not only country, but all forms of music. You know, I mean,
you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you know, I remember when they were saying things of the nature, you know, where in the mid '60s, in the middle of the rock revolution, when they were saying things like Clapton is God and all of these things. Well, Clapton would have been the first one to tell you that he learned what he got from Howlin' Wolf.
See?
And from Elmore James. And
see?
from Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. But these are people that our people don't know about.
Exactly. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing to me.
Right.
So.
Right.
So,
yeah,
now,
you know,
now,
I got this. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, now here's the interesting thing about it as far as I'm concerned. What we have to do is me at my age make sure that somebody younger than me knows what I know. I was talking to a very good friend of mine, and his name is Weldon McDougal.
Mm-hmm.
If you Google Weldon McDougal, you will see the impact and the influence that he's had on music, especially in the city of Philadelphia, over the last 50 years. And he's turned out to be a very, very good friend of mine.
Wow.
And I would talk to Weldon, and Weldon would tell me all of these wonderful stories about everybody I wanted to know about, from Johnny Taylor to the Four Tops and the Temptations, and these guys were all his close personal friends.
Right.
And I actually had the opportunity to set up an interview with him and another gentleman who was very famous in my neck of the woods. You may remember him, a guy by the name of Bobby Patterson.
No, I can't pull him out.
Right. Well, if you listen to, and I think you can get it that way you are, on the AM dial, KKDA, it's on the 7:30 on the AM dial. And if you check it now, all of the things that Bobby Patterson was able to do in the industry, he wrote a couple of very big songs for Albert King. He He wrote, that's what the blues is all about for Albert King. And he also wrote Open House in My House for Little Johnny Taylor. And these were two very big songs. And the person that got Bobby started in the business was Weldon McDougal. I called and I said, hey, I called Bobby because there's a radio show here in Dallas. I said, I have somebody who wants to talk to you. And I had Weldon on the other line, and Weldon said hello. And that was the first time these guys talked to each other in 25 years. So after they did the interview, we got off the phone with Bobby, and they exchanged information and all those wonderful things. And I called Weldon, and I talked to him, and he said, TL, thank you for believing me.
Wow.
And I said, man, it's very weird. It's a very weird experience when you have a legend that says to you, and I mean, this man is a bona fide legend. When you have a legend that says, thank you for believing me. Hey, that's something. But
you know, go ahead.
Weldon will tell me something, and it would be a shame and a scandal for me to keep it to myself.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Because this is our history. This is what people need to know. This is what people, you know. So if something should happen to me or when I get old, then somebody's got to pass this stuff down. It just can't die with people like Weldon and the legends that we've lost this year, like Alina Horn, or we lost Ron Banks this year, the Dramatics, or Ollie Woods of the Temptations. And I just found out today that Vanetta McGee, the legendary, beautiful actress, passed away a few days ago.
You know Walter Hoggins passed away, right?
Yes, I do. Very, very tragic loss. But see, these people are gone now.
Right.
And somebody has to be around to be able to let somebody know what these people went through.
Right.
And that's where people like I come in, and that's where people like you come in, because you can keep the legacy going with what you're doing with this wonderful show.
But I'm just so grateful, man, and you know, the thing that I'm the most grateful of, and I'm humbled that you would, you know, grant to come on and visit with me, and whomever, you know, gets a chance to listen to us. But the one of the things that I'm just really grateful, I'm grateful for your knowledge and your dedication and your determination and your tenacity and your interest and your articulation, man. I mean, and you know, 28 years old, brother, and you know, God's granted you a wonderful gift. And like I say, I'm going to keep on bugging you and till you tell me, man, look, I'm sick and tired of messing with you. but you know, there's so much more that we didn't even, you know, and you know, you asked me, you know, it's 27 after, they get ready to cut us off here in about 3 minutes. And let me do this right quick. I'm going to say that, you know, if you get a chance, give us a call, 347-945-7040. We're on here, Blog Talk Radio. It's called The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, and that's Thursday, 7-8:30 p.m. Alternative media. This is not corporate media. It's alternative media. And I'm so happy to have my brother, T.L. Harris, as a guest on the show this evening, and I hope that you've enjoyed some of it. And you know, you got a open invitation, and I'm gonna throw this out there right quick. Next week, hopefully, it'll be Miss Panadia, and she'll be talking about genealogy. And you wonder if genealogy has any significance to you. Maybe you can find out, because she's been working, trying to put this thing together, and she's a lot more diligent, determined than I am, as well as you are, more so than I am. And hopefully next week after that, I think the 22nd. Upfront and Blunt. She'll be. Hey, TL, it's 20 seconds. Do what you got to do, brother. And thank you for coming.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. And I hope that I've been able to say something while I was on your show that was able to enlighten somebody.
You did. And we're going to have you back anytime. You know that. And we're going to be stretching it out. Hey, this is what we do, brother. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, homie. And I'll catch you on the other side, all right?
All right, take care.
All right, peace, respect, high regard to everybody. And we're going to be signing off. Ice and Friends, The Next Phase, that's The Next Phase. Tired of gossiping and jaw-jacking. Let's move around. Let's get it going. With me, Black Iceman, we do this on Thursday, 7:00 to 8:30 p.m. Thank you for joining us. You have a good week. Have a good weekend. God bless. And you and yours.